One of the common tasks that we face as reliability engineers is dealing with the data that we're gathering, whether it's warranty returns or problems with a prototype or just about anything else, maybe a performance parameter that we're monitoring. We're going to end up having to summarize and possibly report on what does that data mean, what's the information contained within that group of data. Well, patterns and trends is probably the most common thing we do, and it's basically the idea, well, plot the data. Open up your favorite spreadsheet and just plot it. Now, Tukey was a famous statistician a few years ago, and he's written a number of books, but it was really on the notion of all the different ways that you could plot data. So everything from box plots to stem and leaf diagrams and a few that we've talked about in previous lessons. Things like bar charts and line charts and dot charts and so on are all different ways of visualizing the data that you have. Now, there's many, many different ways, and depending on the type of data you have, it may make sense to categorize it as attribute data, or maybe it's time dependent, and we want to see what the pattern is over time. And so that's what these blanks here on the screen are for, is the basic ideas of some things that you've probably seen. So if I've got a set of data that's showing an increasing pattern, so if I have an increasing pattern, then we typically show that as up and to the right, increasing pattern with time. And it could be number of cycles or some other measure that we're interested in, or increasing stress, we see a pattern that emerges. Now, we can test this slope using statistical tools to see if it's significantly different than zero. There's a bunch of other things we can do to evaluate, is this really a trend or not? The first step really is, let's just plot it. Let's get an idea so we can pursue a particular hypothesis appropriately. The other one that's very common and probably shouldn't have to mention it is a decreasing pattern. But there's also patterns that are interesting when you plot the data and then it goes like this, makes a big shift in its mindset. Now, this might be because of a change in the shift, and they come in and change the equipment, and the product changes its performance parameter, or maybe a change of season, and all of a sudden that we're having a higher failure rate, whatever it is that you're plotting. And then it goes back to where it was. But there should be some story as to why these values are here and these are here. Special causes is reminiscent of the discussions about control charts. So if I have my, say, X bar line and the upper control limit, lower control limit, just as a reminder, a special cause is an item that's out of control. And so if I have points at different places within the control limits, but then I end up with a point that's outside, see if I can find my red pen here, then those are out of control. And of course, there's other patterns that we can watch for that signal something is really odd. So basically, I'm tracking my data and I get this spike that drops me out of what would be an expected pattern of stability. In another area is that we may have a cyclic kind of response. So it may be that every third month we have a low point in some parameter that we're measuring. Or it might be every year, in just after the holidays, we have a spike in failed returns. Maybe some unique reasons because of the seasonal or cyclic nature of either the equipment or the buying patterns or whatever it might be. So there's I'm drawing a blank on the statistics that go with this, but it's a time dependent or time response. Oh, I'm sure I'll think of it just after I stop the recording. There is a branch of statistics that goes into modeling these cyclic kind of behaviors and allows you then to make predictions that instead of being just a straight line showing an increasing or decreasing trend, it takes into account this repeating nature that occurs that allows you to then make a more accurate estimate of what's going on. And it may be all kinds of reasons why we get cyclic responses. It could be machine settings. It could be changes of shifts that subtly change the operation of your equipment. It could be buying patterns. It could be advertising patterns, all kinds of different things. But there should be a story when you see a deliberate, when a cyclic pattern shows up, there should be a story behind it as to what's causing that. So another part, and I know we talked about this earlier with process control, is variability. The mean value can change, right? As in the increasing or decreasing patterns of these other patterns. But the variance term, the variability, the standard deviation, those parts can vary also. So I may have a process that's doing pretty well, but over time it becomes much more erratic. And so the variability itself starts to increase. And that's a pattern that's troublesome because we're seeing an increase in the standard deviation with time or the variance with time. So instead of a shift in the mean value, as in this one above it, the change in the variability means our system is becoming less and less predictable as to where it's going to land next. So each of these things can and should have a story behind them to explain what's going on. If you're watching the data or plotting the data, it becomes much easier to spot these kinds of patterns and others that are similar. Now, one of the things we use quite often in reliability work is time to failure data. And just the slope, the beta term of the Weibull plot is often very, very useful. So if I'm going to plot a cumulative distribution function, which is the probability of failure over time, the cumulative probability of failure, I go from 0.99%, 0.01 percentile on the vertical axis. It's in a log scale. And so that puts 0.6 about here, roughly. And if I'm using time on the x-axis. Now, one of the patterns is if I have a decreasing failure rate, a beta or the slope value of less than 1, it generally means that my cumulative distribution function, this slope, is less than 1, and it appears in most cases as a shallow or gentle rise over time. So this is cumulative failures over time, so it will always appear like an increasing trend, but it's a cumulative distribution function that shows the cumulative probability of failure with time. And so even though it's a slowing failure rate, it just is going to take a long time before it gets to all of them failed, hence a shallow slope. So another piece of this is if I have a beta equal to 1, and that will be a slope of 1, and at any point in time, the probability of failure is identical to every other point in time. So this is essentially an exponential distribution. Another slope is that if the beta is between 1 and 4, it's going to be a little bit steeper, and it implies that I have an increasing failure rate. And what generally happens is you'll see a pattern where the product will, on a probability distribution function, it will have some relatively low failure rate and then an increase to where they all fail. So it'll have a long tail on the inside, and then more than half will fail in a relatively quick time, or it'll be very steep where the bulk of them fail. So there's a couple of ways that we get this beta of greater than 1. I think it's at 3.6, 3.4, I don't remember exactly, on a PDF plot. It will appear almost like a normal distribution. Now, it doesn't go to negative infinity, but it does have similar to a bell-shaped curve over the range of times that we're interested in. But if I have a beta greater than 4, then it's a very steep slope and usually means that there's almost no chance of failure out to some point in time. And then it seems to have all of them fail fairly quickly. This would be a CDF plot. So one of the patterns you may see in a Weibull set of plots, if I'm looking at the returns from, say, a system, a small system, say a medical device that has a number of subsystems in it, and I may be tracking for, say, a couple of months, and then I notice the data goes almost vertical. Now, this is what I would call a hockey stick kind of approach. Now, what's going on here? I have changes in the slope of the line after some point in time. Say this is 9 months. Well, what's happening is that there's a certain failure here that is dominating the early failures. And it may have a slope less than one. For example, and this is, I'm recounting an actual case I worked on or a product I worked with, is that they had some installation damage and that would cause some latent defects in the product that would generally fail in some percentage of their overall units, which is a classic early life failures and a beta pattern of less than one. But at 9 months or so, they had a part of their product that actually wore out, and it had a very steep slope to its particular beta. If you broke it out by what was failing, this beta was greater than 4. And so we ended up with this blue line, which gave us this hockey stick approach. So we were moving right along and predicting for the first year that we were going to have a failure rate like this. And after units that had been in the field for 9 months started to fail at a much higher rate, we had to revise those estimates. The other way we looked at this, let me get rid of that, is we have this hockey stick like this. As soon as you see that pattern, the recommendation is gather some of the data, units here, and do some failure analysis on them, and the same here. How are they different? It's a signal that there's a fundamentally different failure mechanism at play that's causing the change in the rate of your overall system failures. So if you see a pattern like this, first is really looking at the beta values to see what kind of pattern you're looking for and what kind of indicators where you would go look for data or go look for fixes. But if you see this change in slope, it usually means that something that wasn't occurring at very high rates early on is now come to play and is accelerating very quickly. And it's a telltale sign that something is probably seriously wrong. And so it's one of the reasons I mention it here. Now, there's plenty of other examples and patterns that you'll see in Weibull plots. I know one that I've seen in test data is that I have a set of failures, say, for 20 samples I'm testing, and it does this kind of upside-down hockey stick, where my pattern is like this, actually. But these 2 points were early in the program, were early failures. And because of the way I'm making the measurements, or because of the test setup, or a variety of different reasons, the noise in this early tail one is just usually much higher than other places. And two is I may have artificially not discovered those failures until later, but the bulk of my data is on a nice straight line. So in that case, I would ignore the first 2 points and use the bulk of the data. But I would still investigate what was going on here. Were they the same failure mechanism? Were they a different phenomena or behavior? Was it an artifact of the testing? But you should have a pretty decent story to explain any pattern that you see, whether on Weibull or on some of these other plots. Now, a very common technique is called a Pareto analysis. And it's based on the idea that it's an 80-20 rule, although I don't know that it's a rule per se, is that 80% of the problems are caused by 20% of the items or issues. So if I take a look at just the rank ordering of how many times I see a particular failure, I may see this 80-20 rule where 80% of my total number of issues fall into two categories. And it really is just a prioritization process to look at, well, if I solve this one and cut it in half, it's better than completely eliminating, you know, 3, 4, or 5 other problems that may be much harder to solve. So part of the process of Pareto is look for where the opportunities are, and it's a very common technique. And so the analysis part is really looking at what is the leading causes of failure or the leading categories of issues that we want to tackle. And it's based on the idea that that in most cases that we'll have one or two things that really will dominate the types of failures that we're seeing, for example. And if we solve those, then we make some significant improvement to the product. It also means that there's going to be some that are just very infrequent. And solving these might be just as difficult as solving something that has a lot more occurrences. So if that's the case, go for the one that has more occurrences. It'll have more return on the effort to create the solve. And so that's a couple of ways of looking at the Pareto analysis. Now, of course, there's other ways to do plots and analyze your data. This is just a couple of them. But control charts come to mind is a common way to take a look at your information. Bar charts, line charts, the basic idea. And what Tukey was really saying was plot the data. But why is it important? Why do we emphasize this doing plotting the data? Why isn't a table of numbers or a screen full of figures sufficient for us to figure out what's going on? Well, part of it is that we are good at recognizing patterns. And so by plotting it, we can recognize those trends that I mentioned earlier. We can also look for those anomalies, the hockey stick, for example, in the Weibull plot. A table of numbers contains exactly the same information. It's just not visible. And so by using our ability to recognize these patterns and by plotting it, making the data relative to each other includes the visibility of that information, we can discern what's going on, or better yet, we can ask better questions about the data set that we have. So in the next section, we'll take a look at a couple of ways that we can use this data for both preventative and for corrective action.